All right, away we go. Happy Monday, August 2nd. It's actually pretty late in the day. I had quite a bit of crap going on today. I do apologize for that. But welcome to today's episode of the Bipolar Bear Podcast, featuring yours truly, Garrett Michael Conklin. Hey, did you like my intro? So I'm trying to get more creative with this stuff. And you know, like, seems like some of these more advanced and successful podcasts have like intros and outros and things like that. So I figured I was going to add, you know, I had to find a piece of music that I haven't released yet, because everything that I release gets sound scanned. So if I put something out with my own material in it, it'll end up getting flagged. Even though it's my stuff, it's just the way the distributors work. They just flag every piece of content if you put it out there yourself. So for copyright reasons and all that fun stuff. So I'm using a piece that I haven't released yet, so it should last a little while. And I can take a little bit of a test and see if it's going to get flagged later on after the song gets released. But it probably won't be out till like November or October or December, something like that. I really found, like I said, I mentioned, I picked up a piano plugin for free the other day from Waves, and man, I really like it a lot, and I've been using it tons with Ripcord, so I'm coming up with like this whole new themed album that's going to be like all this one kind of like Rhodesy, organy kind of thing, and I have a really cool tune, so that's what you just heard in the intro, and you'll hear it again in the outro. Anyway, I got a lot to get to today. Well, maybe not really, but there was one thing I wanted to actually... What I wanted to really talk about today was regret and resentment, because I have a lot of that. But what I was listening, coming back from a doctor's appointment, I was listening to one of my other episodes, and I'm listening to myself bitch and complain about stuff, as always, because that's just what you get here at the Bipolar Bear Podcast. A lot of whining and feeling sorry for yourself and, you know, the world's smallest violins and all that kind of fun stuff. But anyway, what had struck me is that, you know, I'm sitting here complaining and whining and bitching about, oh, I'm not this, I'm not successful, nothing's worked out for me, blah, 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 blah. And while I'm sure there's plenty of examples of individuals where those things have worked out, what I forgot to mention, or what I should have mentioned, or what was an oversight on my behalf, was the fact that the majority of things out there in the creative universe that have been wildly successful, or even, you know, successful enough to make a living at, have not been achieved through a single individual by themselves. Well, so Garrett, what do you mean by that? What I mean by that is, if you go look at any song, let's take music for example, go look at any popular song, and you're going to see that there are countless numbers of songwriters, multiple people listed as producers, there's a couple record labels potentially affiliated with the artist, there's multiple publishing companies, there's a marketing company, managers, agents, all kinds of stuff and people and effort put around something to get it to that level. So to be fair, I don't have any of that. And, you know, my marketing acumen and business acumen are in the normal world. They're not, you know, well, marketing zero. Business acumen is in specifically technology. So none of that really applies to the music business itself, because I have no idea how that business works. And that's, you know, my own fault, I guess. But that was another thing I was complaining about, is that it's like that information is so hard to come by. And I don't mean that I wouldn't be willing to pay for it, but it seems that the people that are willing to charge you for that kind of information are the most full of shit. They don't have real, solidified, legitimate scenarios that you can go out and try and that actually produce results without spending inordinate amount of money. There's a few guys I watch on YouTube, and I think they're great and they've been successful in their own right, but everything that I've seen in their free content doesn't really make me feel compelled to spend thousands of dollars with them to take my career to the next level. You know, and I'm not going to discredit what they're saying or what they're doing. Maybe it does work, but without definitive proof, like, I'd rather work with somebody that's going to take a piece of the pie than take $2,000, $3,000 up front. To me, it feels like getting paid up front isn't really showing that you have a vested interest in the outcome of the project. It means you just want to give the same recycled information that you're giving everybody else to me for the same amount of money. And, you know, that's a valid business model, right? The repeatability of something, once you've created valuable content, the ability to redeliver that over and over and over again without changing it much or changing it all is you know, super powerful and super effective at making money, because you're effectively doing something one time and being able to recover, you know, recurringly grab money from it. That's, you know, like my songs. I make one song, and if it plays 100 million times, I only, you know, put the effort into it once, and I got 100 million plays out of it. That's a wild success right there. So I can understand that that's the approach, but they're not, you know, these things aren't like 50 or 100 bucks. These are thousands of dollars to get involved with these people on a real level. And to me, it's just, you know, I'm jaded at this point. I've been screwed over just too many times to get in back into something like that and be like, yeah, this is going to be it. This is going to work. Only to come out on the other side going, yeah, it didn't work. So I want somebody that has, you know, legitimately, I mean, I guess this is really defining and describing the old music business model to some degree, because this is what labels would do. They're the ones that would take the chance on you because they had the team of people that could go out there and, you know, solicit your music. And I'm sure that's true of anything else. Like, how do I hype my podcast? Let's say I wanted to make this podcast really famous. And, you know, I would, let's take out the content and everything that I'm doing here, because potentially what I don't mean it for me specifically. I'm just using this as an example, because arguably the content that I'm providing in this podcast may not be very popular. So I don't want it to be arbitrary like that. And I don't want it to be discounted simply because, well, Garrett, your content sucks and it's too specific and nobody wants to listen to it. I'm just saying in general, what do you do to promote a podcast? Can somebody tell me? Outside of posting it on your own social media, potentially taking out ads that you could do on social media, which I've said before have been highly ineffective at actually driving someone to the content. So I'll get lots of views. So if I do an ad on Instagram, Instagram was always seemed to be more engaging, or I got more views out of it for the same amount of investment than I did on Facebook. So I would take out an ad for like $30 and I'd get like 27 to 30,000 views. But when you look through and you get into the analytics, the people that clicked through my link to go actually listen to the song, it was like a few dozen. So if you go by that kind of gauge, I'd need, again, to get back to what I've said many times before, you'd need to then expose your links or your content to literally millions and millions of people to achieve the kind of numbers that, if you know, you're doing it to 20 or 30,000 and you get like 25 to 30 people that might click through your link, and that's a lot. And that still doesn't mean they listen to it. That just means they actually click the link in the ad. I don't know that I actually got a play from that. I just know that it shows that that someone clicked the link. So hopefully they played 30 seconds of the song and I actually got a stream out of it, but I don't even know that. But it still, it cost me $30 a week to do that. So imagine what the numbers would be if you're trying to hit an audience of millions of people per week for, let's say, a 6-week campaign. Again, you're spending thousands and thousands of dollars with the hope that something that you do jumps off and you know, it takes off and recoups itself. And now remember, you know, like I've said with this podcast, using that as an example, I've made like $20 and I've got a little over 2,200 plays or views or whatever listens to this, to these episodes, to the 108 episodes that I have. I have a little over 2,200 plays. And I've made 20, like, it's like $19 and change. So like $20. So why would I go in and invest $1,000 in an advertising campaign unless I knew or had some level of certainty that by doing that, I was going to be able to at least recoup the couple $1,000s I spend on advertising? Or are we looking at this business as just a complete loss? And that's just the way it is. You have to just squander money. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I don't know. You be the judge of that. Maybe that's how it works. But what I was getting at the beginning of this, and something that I left out in the last rant that I had, was that the majority of very famous and very successful people that are out there, and again, you'll find exception to this. There definitely are exceptions to this, where there's people that have hundreds of millions of streams, and it's just them, or just them and a record label. Most of the time, though, you're going to see that there are multiple songwriters, multiple producers, multiple instrumentalists. It's not just, for example, Justin Timberlake all by himself. It's Justin Timberlake, Timbaland, and on and on and on. The list goes of all these other people that get involved in it. And then you would imagine that all of their networks get involved in it and these big pushes happen. So of course these things are going to move forward and take off. Just like, you know, I was ragging the shit out of Joe Rogan the other day, and that was, you know, I'm embarrassed about that. It is what it is. I said it. So, you know, it is what it is. It's not, the good thing is it's not like he's going to hear it. So it doesn't really matter. But the point being, you know, giving back, like I was saying, oh, you don't give back. That's not true, right? He has people on his podcast that are not super famous. I think he had a girl on, her name was Annie Lieberman, maybe. I think that, I could be pronouncing it wrong, but she is just, you know, a comedian. And not super famous, not like Eliza Schlesinger type of famous or Whitney Cummings. You know, they haven't hit that. She hasn't hit that stride yet. So she's still just a regular kind of person. And he had her on the podcast. And, you know, so there is give back right there. So that's definitely using his platform and his vehicle to help somebody else out that is not in any way near the same level he is. And you could probably argue that for a lot of other guests that he has, because I don't know that some of these scientists and some of these conspiracy theorist type people are making huge amounts of money doing whatever it is that they're doing, but they're in a different discipline. So the idea for them is just to get the word out and get more validity behind what they're trying to say rather than, you know, blow up on social media and become TikTok famous or something stupid like that. I think it's just to get their word out and, again, to validate their position and give their theories more weight than they currently have, you know, so he definitely does that. So, you know, I feel incumbent upon myself that I probably need to say some of the positive things. But what I was really driving at with that whole thing is that once you've reached a point like that and you've got hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars, and, you know, theoretically, you're going to be set for the rest of your life. If you want to lead a regular life, I'm not saying you can go buy $50 million mansions all up and down the United States, but you know, you could lead a wonderful, fulfilling life and never have to lift a finger again to do anything. Yeah, once you've reached that point, of course, everything feels rewarding because you don't have to worry about it. It's pure at that point. Right? You don't have to go, oh my God, how many streams did I get? Let me check to see how much money I'm at. No one cares when they're at that level. You have money just falling in on all fronts. And of course, that stuff builds upon itself, right? So once you've reached that kind of level, I'm sure he gets constantly bombarded and inundated with advertising requests and, oh, let us pay you 50 grand and say this on your podcast. And, you know, all this crap that goes along with having that kind of influence over that number, that larger number of followers, or at least that larger number of ears, right? Because if I do something on my podcast promoting something, who gives a shit? Nobody, you know, what do I have, 20 listeners here? Nobody's going to care about that at the corporate level where they're going to, you know, bother to sponsor you. You can just, and that's not me dissing my own stuff or the number of listeners I have. That's just fact, right? If you want to do like affiliate marketing on like Amazon or something like that. Part of the criterion for that is you have to have a certain number of followers in your social media, you know, package. And the reason I know that is because I tried to do it. And when I put in the number of followers I have on Facebook and Instagram, it said, well, we're sorry, but you're not eligible to be an affiliate marketer with Amazon because you don't have enough of a social media following. So all of this stuff is predicated on you have to build something before all, and that's the killer of it, is that I won't need any of that crap once I've built that. And I think that's funny how that stuff works in reverse. It's like, you know, and it's been like this forever. This is not something new. You know, it's always like the record labels come running to you after you've been successful on your own and you don't need them anymore. It's like, well, what the hell do I need you for? Where the fuck were you when I was nothing? When I actually needed you. Oh yeah, you weren't there then, but you're here now. So, you know, it's like reverse. So it's the same thing. I could use sponsorships, advertisers, you know, promoters, somebody to help me marketing, get this thing going so that it really got exposed to people. Because I think that if it were to do that, it would be marginally, if not mildly, successful. You know, I'm saying a lot of things here in a way that's, you know, coming out of my mouth, I guess, but not really unique in a sense, but perspective-wise, it's unique because it's my own personal perspective about things. And if there's some level of entertainment to listening to somebody like me ramble on about their own personal life, and I mean, what is reality TV if not that? Right? I mean, we're watching shows constantly. We're inundated on television on all these different networks of reality TV of people just, you know, going through their basic day of life, whether it's scripted or not. And that's what you're watching. That's what we find entertaining now in society. So, you know, to that point, what I'm doing here is not any different than that. This is just Garrett Michael Conklin's daily perspective on, you know, what's going on in my personal life and the circumstances and the situations that I find myself in and the struggles that I'm going through and how I deal with them and how poorly I deal with them in most cases. So to some degree, that might be very entertaining. But the point is, if there's not a million people out there that this thing is out there being promoted to, nobody hears it. You know, I mean, I truthfully don't know. I would guess, because it's a podcast, I mean, how many times are you going to listen to a podcast? One time, right? So, I mean, if I look at my statistics for what I have out there, I have 2,218 plays of 108 episodes that I've made in podcasting. So to me, that means I've had 2,218 people minus the 107 listens of my own. So about 2,100 listens from people that are not me. Because like I said, I listen to all my podcasts at least one time, I think. I don't know that I listen to them more than once, but at least once. Sometimes, you know, some of the older ones, I don't know that I went back and listened to them because they were so difficult to listen to because they sounded like crap. So yeah, but the point is, if I take out myself, I still have over 2,000 people that have listened to this. But I mean, that's nothing, you know, and I'm not diminishing it. I mean, I'm super thankful. Hey, good for you. I think that's awesome. And good for me that, you know, people have listened, 2,000 people have listened to this podcast. You know, I mean, because who am I? Why would you listen to me at all? Why would this be entertaining to anyone? You know, how did you even find it? I literally do no kind of advertising or promotion of any kind for any of this stuff. Man, gotta love those dogs, right? They just can't seem to not bark at shit as things walk by and people come home. They're just out of hand with that noise. Sorry about that. And now that I'm hoarse from screaming up the stairs, yelling at the dog... Can you tell? Does my voice sound any different now? So anyway, I thought that was an interesting thing to bring back up because, you know, it's not fair to necessarily compare my lack of success with any, you know, with what I was trying. I mean, I'm comparing it to people that are managed and they have groups of people and they have a company behind them, all that kind of stuff. There's no reason at all that I should be doing that. That doesn't make any kind of sense. In any regard. I mean, I'm by myself. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have that skill set. I don't have those networking connections. I don't have the know-how. I don't know what I'm doing. So it's not really fair to say that, whoa, you know, I'm not successful. And well, of course not. I don't know how to do any of that. And I'm arguably doing nothing. I post on Twitter that I have, you know, a couple hundred followers on every time I make a podcast. And that literally is it. Because most of the time I'm so ashamed of these things, I wouldn't want to post them on social media like Facebook where people that I know follow me and would go listen to this because it would be humiliating. I don't want people that I might know in real life to hear any of this. This is terrible. I mean, I'm embarrassing myself every day when I do these. I'm just revealing everything about myself, my successes, my failures, and everything in between. So... there's some level of trepidation there with regard to letting people that are in my family and people that are in my, you know, my actual people that I know, not like any of them are my like best buddies or friends that we do stuff with, but nevertheless, I'm not trying to promote this in that regard. I'd rather complete strangers be the people that listen and take enjoyment in listening to this podcast. So that said, let me shift gears for a second because this morning I was at the doctor. I've mentioned that I have, a fatty liver. I think it's called NASH or NAFLD or something like that. Non-alcoholic fatty liver streptococcus. I don't know, something like that. But I have a fatty liver. And, you know, you got to keep watching that thing every 6 months and make sure that it's not going into a cirrhotic state where you, you know, then you have problems, you die from that. So unfortunately, I'm dealing with that, but I have to have something called an endoscopy. And as I'm looking at the photographs of this, this doesn't look awesome at all. I had to have a transesophageal echocardiogram one time, and they basically make you, they kind of give you like a twilight drug. So you're a little bit like, you know, it's like a roofie kind of thing, I think. And then they make you swallow this like numbing, but it, this numbing liquid, but it's not very liquidy. It's like syrup is the consistency. It's really thick. And it's totally disgusting. So as I'm looking at this, I wonder if that's something that, you know, yay, I'm going to have to do that. That kind of sucks. I'm not really too thrilled about doing this. Whatever. I mean, I don't want to do it because here's my thing. On one hand, I want to know and I want to see what's going on. On the other hand, I'm terrified to know to see what's going on, because if they say, hey, man, your liver's in bad shape, you know, there's nothing that can be done for that. At this day and age, you're just stuck. You know, it either maintains or it gets worse, and, you know, it gets to the point where it starts failing, and then you have to go and get on the list for a transplant, and, you know, that's a big deal too. So that's not a good outlook. So I don't want to deal with that. But at the same time, I want to go through all these things because my 18-year-old daughter has this as well. So I think from a beneficial standpoint and a knowledge and an understanding of what this is for her benefit, I think it's, you know, definitely worth doing it. I have to have an endoscopy and then another ultrasound of my liver to see, I guess, what it looks like. But, you know, my blood tests, everything's fine in that regard. Everything's holding steady. So hopefully that means that it's not become more cirrhotic, but you never know. And I did ask the doctor too. I'm like, you know, isn't there anything from a research standpoint or anything going on? Because this is becoming a big thing for a lot more people than it ever used to be. Or maybe it's just something that's more of a focus now, but there's no actual treatment for this. You have it. They tell you to lose like some percentage of your body fat, and that's basically all you can do. There's no medications. There's no supplements. None of that stuff has been clinically proven to do anything. So it's, you know, he basically was like, well, you can take milk thistle and all these things, but you're just getting, you know, whatever the benefit is from that, but there's no proven benefit directly to your liver for that. So do it at your own leisure, basically. You know, if you want to spend the money, do it, but it's, you're not getting a clinically proven benefit from doing it, which is disappointing. Because these things really, you know, like LiverMD and some of these 1MD sites, they really promote that, oh yeah, this works and it's great and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and I'm kind of, you know, I'm sort of on the fences on that because I take this other pill called Atrantil, and it's a horse chestnut kind of supplement. And oh my God, does that help? It completely eliminated my IBS. I mean, I can't really stop taking this stuff. Otherwise I get bloated and my stomach gets upset and my intestines are all ugh, but it works really well. And that's just some kind of natural herbal supplement mix, you know, some proprietary blend of basically horse chestnut and peppermint leaf is what it says it is. And that definitely works. Granted, that's not unknown that at least the peppermint side of that has always been a digestive pacifier, you know, since forever. So you can chew on a peppermint leaf and get benefits from that as well, you know, like a raw leaf. These just happen to go into my intestines and my colon and stuff, and they really make it feel a lot better. So I've been taking that stuff for years now. So that's my point being is that that's why I'm kind of like open to holistic medicines and herbal supplements and things like that, because just because it wasn't studied doesn't mean it doesn't actually work, you know, and it's not approved by the FDA. And I mean, you know, the COVID vaccine isn't approved by the FDA, and they're pushing everybody to take that damn thing. And now we're watching it, how it doesn't, you know, it's not as effective. We're going to all need a booster shot. The Delta variant is, you know, less receptive to it, and it's overcoming it. Who knows, right? I mean, who knows with all this crap? It's so difficult to keep up with everything that it's nearly impossible, right? I mean, I was saying this the other day too, you know, it's like for every good thing or for every, you know, one side of a study that's out there, you could find countless numbers of the opposing opinion as well. So I guess, you know, we have all this data and all this information, but it's still just noise for the most part because it's not filtered and you don't really know, and you don't want it to be managed and manipulated in a way that's not, yeah, that's really the conundrum. There's the word of the day. It always comes in. That word conundrum always comes in as the word of the day. I probably should do this because if you don't know, if you're new to the podcast or you don't actually know what the word conundrum means, it's a confusing and difficult problem or question. That's it. So I'm pondering confusing and difficult problems or questions pretty much all the time. So lots of things are a conundrum to me. They're a mystery to me. It's like, wow, what's going on? But anyway, yeah, that is a real, that's a difficult topic, right? That's a tough one because you don't want people to sanitize and filter the data and skew it in any way, because that's what we're seeing on social media now with suppression of information. But how do you know what's good and what's bad? So I'm not going to, let me be devil's advocate just for a minute here. I'm not defending like Google, Facebook, any of these clown operations out there that are doing all this censoring. But at the same time, let's say there was no corruption, right? They're not being paid to do this. And then they don't have their own internal agenda. Let's just say this is legitimate. How would you go about taking a piece of information that comes out of my mouth and quantifying it or qualifying it as valid or accurate? That is a conundrum, right? That is no doubt a very, very difficult thing to be able to do accurately, right? I mean, I've worked in technology for a lot of years, and one of the most challenging pieces of infrastructure management is monitoring and having clean monitoring, what's something that's called clean monitoring. And it means that you don't have false positives, meaning when 5,000 web hosts start alerting for backed up traffic or failing calls, it's not actually the web host. It's probably the cache server in front. Maybe it's the SQL database, a couple layers behind, that kind of a thing. So really, does it matter that the web servers are alerting? No, they're a symptom. They're not the cause. So what you really want in alerting in this context is you want to know only the root cause and get the correlation of what that root cause is causing. So you want to say, okay, well, there's a SQL database that's in the back end that's bogged down with a long query and it's stuck and everything else is waiting on that. And here's everything else that's waiting on that. Let's bundle that all up as one giant alert. And this is a singular problem. It's not 20,000 problems. And that was something I worked on many years ago when I worked for Yahoo, is alert correlation to a single endpoint or a single metric that would say, okay, this is the problem. This is everything that's a part of that problem. And when you've resolved the problem, just close all 20,000 alerts. Because the boards used to be filled to the, you know, it was unmanageable. It was just too much noise. So the same could be true for this entire concept that I'm putting out there, this notion of like, how many posts, honestly, do you think that across all these platforms, there's got to be literally hundreds of millions of posts like an hour, right? It's not even like per day. It's instantaneous stuff. There is just such a barrage of data across all these different platforms. It's probably closer to the billions. Billions of posts an hour. If there's hundreds of millions of users across a dozen or so platforms, can you imagine trying to manage all that? And conclude in real time, mind you, because none of this crap can like go through moderation or mediation and be looked at, you know, and they kind of do that now. Like if Twitter gets something gets flagged, it gets looked at potentially before it's pulled down or marked as inappropriate content or whatever. So you can get away with it for a little bit, but to try to take something that I say, like if I say, you know, the vaccine is a hoax, how in the frickin' world are you supposed to know if that's real, fake, valid, invalid, justified, backed up? There's sources, but how would you know that from some random post? And maybe I'm kind of high leveling this. I'm not really deep diving into the technology of it, but let's be honest, that is not a simple problem to solve. So if I'm going to be the devil's advocate and just let these guys all off the hook for a minute, this is a really, really difficult thing to try to solve for. That would be my opinion. Right? Knowing what I do about technology, which is not you know, an inordinate amount. I'm not some genius, but I've been around it for a while. These are not simple things to do. They really aren't. When you start getting into natural language analytics and things like that, it's very difficult because depending on how somebody said something, there's all the semantics of, you know, like colloquialisms and slang and sarcasm, and none of that stuff comes across in text, right? It just reads how it reads. So you don't know if somebody's joking, being silly, being funny, just being ignorant, being racist, being who knows what. It's so difficult to be able to pick apart, 240 characters or whatever Twitter is at this point, let's say as an example, and decide whether that post is valid or invalid. And of course, I mean, people like me that have no following, I could say whatever the hell I want. They don't give a shit because nobody's following me. I could say the most ridiculous crap that there is, and it's not going to matter because I have no strength behind it. It only matters when you matter. And, you know, arguably that's another tragic downfall of social media is that the majority of us don't matter. And if that's the platform from which we all interact and base our judgments of ourselves, which a lot of people do, if you don't have hundreds of thousands of people validating your posts, then you feel like you're a piece of shit and you don't count. You're invalid and you're nothing. You know, and I don't know, you know, I probably should research stuff like this, but I don't know how far and wide this reaches or, you know, like I use social media, but I mean, do people in the Midwest use social media the same as the people on the coasts? I don't know. You know, I mean, I'm starting to see commercials now where they have like old timer farmers looking for their iPhone in a haystack. I saw that the other day. I thought that was, it was a pretty funny thing, but I'm like, is that real? Is that really what's going on? You know, or is it really the old timer sitting on the breezeway whittling away while the young kid that's, you know, the grandson's taking over the farm is out on the combine and he's got the iPod or the iPad or the iPhone or, you know, the high tech stuff while he's doing the work. I have a hard time believing that because, you know, my father's 76. He has a friggin' flip phone. You know, he has a phone to make phone calls, not to do all this data, you know, type computational stuff and use apps and all that kind of thing. So I don't know. I don't know how wide reaching or how far reaching all of this stuff really is in the world. And I'm sure people know, you know, I'm sure that information's out there. I can't imagine it's not, because that would be, you know, tell you what areas are ripe for the picking, where you'd want to do your promotions and where you'd want to try to sell more phones if people in, you know, Iowa don't have as many iPhones as people in California. Per capita, of course, got to always be per capita because we're not going to say that there's the same number of people in every state. That's just not fair to do it that way. I mean, that's like me saying what happens in New York City is valid and reflective of what happens in Western New York. There's 250,000, 260,000 people in Western New York. There's like 8.5 million in New York City. So, you know, what happens downstate in New York is very different than what happens up here where I live in New York. Same state, but even just geographically, the location is so vastly different based on where you are. We're not a booming metropolis like that. So it makes a lot of sense that you would see things happen that way, at least in my opinion. I mean, you know, again, I'm not looking at numbers or analytics. I'm just saying that it makes a lot of sense that you try to target places where you have opportunities rather than where the market is already saturated and you're not going to sell another phone no matter what the hell you do because you've saturated the market. It is what it is. So you start looking elsewhere. But I mean, you know, is that a good representation? Is that fair for the whole rest of the country to say that, well, what happens in New York and California is what happens everywhere else and we're going to measure everything by that? That's bullshit. You know, I mean, but I'm still, you know, I have another... I don't know if it's, I guess it's a conundrum, but you know, I'm not getting why there's so much disparity out there, you know, and like I said this the other day, I'm not expecting there to be a single source of all that is true because I mean, at this point, I don't know that that's even possible, right? There's so many outlets. A guy like me can just start a news show and, oh, Garrett Conklin News, here we go. And let's talk about stuff. And you're going to get my take on it. What the hell do I know? I mean, but on the same time, what don't I? Maybe I know something. You know, I mean, this is a really weird kind of like, we're on the cusp of something, in my opinion, where it's getting really weird. And I mean that legitimately, like it's getting weird. It's like strange, what are we really on the precipice of? What is coming? Because it's got to be something. We're right on the teetering edge of something major happening, because everything seemingly is like in disaster mode. You know, and it feels like in history, major advancements, whether it's technology or manufacturing or whatever, always seem to come from extreme stress and struggle. So when times are hardest and things are at their worst and everything is its bleakest moment, you know, all of a sudden everybody comes together and there's some magical thing, you know, some revelation happens where something new is invented or we're pushed into a new era or something like that. And I guess we'll see. I don't know. We'll see if that happens. And on that note, I'm getting pinged. And it's funny because, you know, we're trying to do like a handoff. I've said this before. You know, one of the guys is leaving and he knows a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff. And none of, you know, very little of it is documented in terms of the tribal knowledge aspect. It's like, you know, trying to figure this stuff out and do some type of transition plan is futile. There's no point. Right? I mean, I don't know what any of this stuff is doing, so I'm not going to know what I don't know until I'm faced with it in terms of a request or a problem, and then I'll be like, I don't know how any of this works, so yay. How do I fix this? Or how do we fix this? I'm assuming it's just going to be how do I fix this, because, you know, I'm the only one that knows how to use AWS around here. But that's a really disappointing scenario, because it's really something that's driving me in an enormous way to consider other opportunities. Because, I mean, how am I not going to fail in this circumstance? You know, I mean, I don't, you know, and I'm not criticizing anybody, but there's been no plan at all of transitioning anything. It's just been, okay, well, take a look at this machine, and if you have any questions, let me know. I don't even know what it's doing. You want me to sit there and dissect everything from a running instance or a container and then come to you with questions? How about you tell me what the hell it's supposed to be doing? Or better yet, this was already documented, so it doesn't matter who takes over, because you just read it and go, oh, that's what it's doing. Okay, here's the commands that you need to know, but, you know, what was I thinking? Of course that shit doesn't exist here. I mean, it's ridiculous. No one spends the time doing this. And then when people leave, no one knows how to do anything. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? I think that's, you know, an interesting conundrum, word of the day yet again, I've said it a couple times today, that I'll have to face and figure that out as it comes. But it's making me very uneasy, because I don't really want to deal with that. In the sense that people are going to turn to me and I don't have the answer. And I don't know why you would think I would. Nothing was transitioned to me. So how is that my responsibility or my fault? I'm not in charge of anything anymore. I'm not a boss. I'm not a manager. I'm not a nothing. I'm just a guy that works here. So if that stuff doesn't happen, that's not on me. But I'm sure it will be pinned on me, because somehow it'll be my fault because, you know, like I've mentioned before, the clowns that I'm working for, they don't take responsibility for anything themselves. They don't do anything. They just blame everybody else. So that's the wonderful environment that I find myself in. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to read you a poem yet again from Poetic Rhetoric, Nonsensical Blasphemy by Garrett M. Conklin. This one is called Among the Best. No, I read that yesterday. Strike that. I believe I read that yesterday. Yeah. Let me move on to the next one. This one's called Ask Me a Question. If you were to ask me a question, I'll give you an answer. Not likely what you wanted, but at least it's not cancer. Though benign I may seem, you're still in for a ream, and taken by surprise, it's typically my demise. So I sit all by myself, as I often do. When you're not off the shelf, that's what happens to you. People say they're your friend, but they really don't care. When you need them to bend, mend, or send, they just stare and glare unfair. Lying still, I know the truth, and it will always be the same. I may as well be in an isolation booth, incinerated by the blame. Of course it is mine, and that I do not deny. But meet me halfway as fine, or just leave me here to age like a fine wine. Wow, that's... I don't know why that would be called Ask Me a Question. That would be more like say a whole bunch of crap that means nothing. I think that one's pretty funny. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed my intro, and I hope you enjoy the outro that I've now added to the podcast. I'm pretty pumped about that. And as always, thanks for listening. I do appreciate it. It means a lot to me. I'll go listen to this at some point, and you know, that means a lot to me too. So, hey, with that, hopefully you don't have a case of the Mondays, and you know, your day's going pretty well for you, but have a good week, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks. Hey, quick check. There is no outro. I did the intro. I don't know if you guys will like that. I might not use that anymore. I just thought I'd throw it in there for this time to be see what it was like. But that said, you know, I read that it's important that you get a rating. So if you do listen to this, if you wouldn't mind, I know this is awful to ask, but you know, what are you going to do? If you wouldn't mind, give me a rating on Apple Podcasts. That would be awesome. I guess a 5-star rating is the way to go. So if you think that I'm worth a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, I would really love it if you'd leave me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Okay, thanks. That's for real, the end. Have a good one. Talk to you soon.